morning's Old Testament reading comes from the 32nd chapter of Genesis, beginning in verse 22, a very familiar story of the life of Jacob. The same night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and likewise everything that he had. Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he struck him on the hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" He said, "Jacob." And the man said, "You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humans and have prevailed." And Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved." The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his death. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Two brief announcements before I continue that I forgot earlier. One is there's a typo in the bulletin for this next hymn we'll sing. It is not hymn 782, it is hymn 8. However, it's a very well-known hymn, and it wasn't even close. It's a very well-known hymn, and I don't even know that you'll need it, but if you are looking for the music, it's hymn number 8. Secondly, I want to ask your prayers for Nancy McEntee. Nancy has been a member of our inquirers class and had joined with the session last week, and 2 weeks ago, and was planning to be here, be introduced to you this morning, but they lost their home in a fire on Friday evening. You may recognize Nancy. She sits up here right there in front and has moved here from Florida. She's a college professor. So I hope that you will keep her family in your prayers. She said everything was okay. They got out safely, and then she made the mistake of going back in for the cat. Boy, is the cat mad about that. Please do keep Nancy and her family in your prayers. Now let us pray together. God, you have called us into relationship with you. Give us strength to hold on no matter what comes our way. Give us courage to wrestle honestly with what we don't understand, to continually work out our salvation with fear and trembling, and to learn more each day about what it means to be faithful. We ask this in Christ's name. A little bit of the backstory will help you here. You remember that Jacob is the younger of twin sons of Isaac and Rebekah. Jacob comes out of the womb literally holding on to the heel of his older, by mere moments, brother, trying to pull Esau back so that he himself can get out ahead. Jacob, in fact, will spend his entire life trying to get ahead. Slick talker, deal maker, Jacob swindles his dim-witted brother out of his inheritance in exchange for a pot of porridge. He dupes blind old Isaac into thinking that he is Esau, so that Isaac pronounces on him the ancestral blessing reserved for the oldest son. Once the ruse is discovered, Jacob has to run for his life. Jacob, the deceiver, trickster. Jacob, who acquires by pretense and duplicity that which is not rightfully his. Jacob has the soul of a con man. And con man he continues to be. He goes to Mesopotamia, where his uncle Laban lives, and at his uncle's home, he tends the vast flocks of sheep, and in time marries Laban's daughters, Leah and Rachel. But Jacob can't resist one last scam, and he spends his last months of shepherding in an elaborate cross-breeding scheme that leaves Laban the weakly and sick members of the flock, while Jacob claims the hardy and the healthy. It doesn't take Laban long to figure out what's happened, and he comes after Jacob, seething with rage. Jacob has nowhere to run except back towards Canaan, where Esau has been waiting nearly 20 years to exact his own revenge. As they near the Jordan River, Jacob learns that Esau has mustered 400 armed men on just south of the Jabbok, which is a small tributary east of the Jordan, where he is waiting to settle the score. Who knows whether Jacob is truly changed or is looking for a way out or is just trying to buy some time. He gathers all his possessions, servants, animals, sheep stolen and earned, even his wives and his children, and sends them all across the Jabbok to where Esau is waiting. He's prepared to tell Esau that they are a gift, hoping somehow to bargain his way out of trouble one more time. As the last ox cart rumbles up the far bank of the river and out of sight, Jacob is left alone beside the stream to think and watch and hope, maybe even pray. With Laban behind him and Esau in front of him, Jacob is just too tired to struggle anymore. Ironically, that's when the real struggle begins. A stranger leaps out of the darkness and hurls himself at Jacob. Now, I expect you know the rest of this story. Jacob wrestles with the stranger, an angel or a man or God, or never sure which, until the dawn begins to break. The stranger tries to leave, but Jacob refuses to let him go unless the stranger gives him a blessing. Instead, the stranger gives him two: a blow to his hip and a new name. No longer Jacob, now he is Israel, the one who strives with God. And as the sun rises, Jacob, now Israel, is limping his way toward the river, headed to a potentially disastrous encounter with his brother Esau. He doesn't know what he will find. Maybe Esau has been nurturing a grudge for 20 long years, and who could blame him? Or maybe Esau has made his peace over time. Jacob does not know. And in the end, it does not matter. It does not matter what happens with Esau, because Jacob himself has been changed. The wrestling match brought him to see the face of God, and he realizes that in his 20 years on the run, God has been with him all along. The limp is just to remind him of that. Jacob will carry it with him for the remainder of his journey and for the remainder of his day. That journey theme is one we find throughout the Bible. Abram and Sarah leave home. Paul travels all over the known world to spread the gospel. Jesus is forever on the road with the disciples. Jonah takes the long way around when God calls him to go to Nineveh. Our journeys are what change us. You don't need me to tell you that. Those of you who have raised or are raising children know how that journey will change you. Many of us have lost loved ones, and we are different for having gone through that experience. Our entire world has been changed after 2+ years of a global pandemic. The things we live through, the lessons we learn, the journeys we've been on change us. Find God on those journeys as well, even the ones not of our own choosing. The session, this decided to go with this theme, I like where we're going for our generosity season this year, because it speaks to that journey. New Providence is not the same church it was 236 years ago, nor even 236 days ago. We are not now what we will become. We're on a journey. For this generosity season, we like where we're going. I use that phrase, generosity season, intentionally. This is what we traditionally call stewardship, but that word comes laden with so much baggage about duty and obligation. It's not always a terrible thing. Last month I asked the session to tell me what first came to their minds when I said the word stewardship. There were a couple of bugs and eye rolls. The English professor gave us the etymology of the word from the Middle English. But what most people landed on was taking care of something that doesn't belong to you. And that's right, isn't it? If we believe, as the psalmist says, that the earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, or as James writes, that every good gift comes down from God above, then we are asked to responsibly steward all that God has given us, our financial resources for sure, but also our planet and our communities and even our own lives. Still, I get it with the Uggs and the eye rolls. A friend of mine was looking for a church home for his family recently, and he emailed to tell me that he wasn't sure how he did it, but every time they visited a new congregation, it was what he called Money Sunday. I get it. And that's why I choose this term of generosity season instead. And it's not just semantics. I've been doing a lot of research, a lot of reading lately about giving and generosity. There have been several big research studies done recently about why people give charity. We always think that people give because of who the organization is, or who makes the ask, or the way they're asked. But the surveys show that those percentages were all in single digits. In other words, those reasons weren't all that important. Most people, when asked, why do you give, have one answer. I give because of who I am. 70% of people give not because they're supposed to. They give because of who they are. Now, the way that that happens may look different for every person. Some generations still like the idea of a check and an offering plate, while others may not give unless they can do it through PayPal on their cell phones. But the bottom line is that for all of us, from Gen Z to the greatest generation, we give not because we have to. We give because we want to. It's how we're wired. Our entire impetus for generosity is that that's just who we are. It shouldn't come as a surprise. The writer of Genesis tells us that we are created in the image of God, and as we know so well, God so loved the world that God gave. Generosity is woven into our DNA. It's who we are. We give of ourselves because God has given so abundantly to us. It's not an obligation or a duty. It's an opportunity. When we give, we feel more deeply aligned, more open, more generous, more of who we were created to be. Chalk that up to an endorphin rush if you'd like, but I know that I want to give because I know how much I have been given, and mostly because I know how deeply I am loved. And I know you do this too. Before I wrap this up, let me briefly come back around to Jacob. The writer finishes this little story by saying, "The sun rose upon Jacob you all know that I've been out for the last two Sundays with COVID, so I'm hesitant to say that we're past this thing. But there is a sense that the sun is rising on a new day for us. We're coming out of our pandemic cocoons changed, to be sure. But there is a hopeful future ahead of us. I don't know if you can feel that, but I sure can. I'm excited about what's on the horizon. A potential capital campaign to eliminate debt and make our facilities more welcome. A Matthew 25 commitment to working to eradicate systemic poverty. New members.